like 4 million tons of hydrogen exploding on the sun, like the whisper.
Hello and welcome to episode 195 of the Film Yak Podcast. I'm John.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm JR.
And today we're talking JR's pick. JR wanted us, he's so desperate to get into the algorithm, wanted us to watch The Odyssey, you know, the new Christopher Nolan blockbuster, starring every actor in Hollywood. And it's in theaters now. It's still, those 70mm IMAX screenings are still sold out for months down the road, as long as Fandango can, as far as Fandango can show me. And, you know, so we're going to talk The Odyssey, and we're going to talk other stuff we watched, which ain't a lot for me. I did not watch much, but I'll do my best. And how are you guys tonight?
Yeah, just having a time.
Yeah.
Went to the amusement park down the street with the girls tonight. It was a blast.
Oh, nice.
Got to ride some rides. Did a tilt-a-whirl with Renee. She loved it. No?
Really? No, I'm not into stuff like that, personally. Although, there's a Six Flags here, and I know I'm going to have to go to it eventually. But
yeah. I mean, those are... some of these places are so expensive, but luckily the one we went to is like a shithole that, you know, it's like, I mean, it's awesome, but it is a shithole. It's $5 to get in, 50 cents a ticket to ride.
That's pretty good. Like, yeah, I would pay that. We went to Stone Mountain a few weeks ago when my sister was here, and it was like $25 to get into Stone Mountain Park. Which I was like, okay, you know, no big deal. And then you drive up, and then if you wanted to go to, like, they have, like, a little sort of amusement park area, but it's nothing but, like food crap. And there's, like, a really small arcade. It's, like, one room, and it's, like, you know, it's got, like, six machines in it. And there's mini golf. And it was, like, $60 a person to get into this thing.
You can fuck that sky high.
It was out of control. We did it because we didn't know what we were doing. You know, we're like, the last time I was in Stone Mountain was like 25 years ago. Like, and a lot of that crap wasn't there when I was a kid. None of that shit was there. It was just like a big field, and you would look at the mountain, and there were lasers that they would project onto the mountain at night. It was cool. But now it's they're trying Pink to make Floyd? It like a thing, you know. No, they don't. I feel like there was music maybe or something, but I don't remember. I mean, this is all when I'm like 8 years old. I don't remember anything. You know? I just remember there was like a laser light show. And
okay.
Now they do drones. They like use drones to do the light show. But
right.
I don't know. It was insane. Yeah. So, you know, probably won't be going to do that again. But there's other cool shit here. So it's been pretty good.
Sweet.
Haven't gone to Six Flags yet, but I'm sure we will. Been going to the trampoline park a lot.
Yeah. I took the boys to one that's just down the street from us the other day, and, you know, I'm like chasing them around screaming, parkour!
Parkour, yeah.
Yeah.
you jump with them?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I don't do anything. I just sit. I just sit and watch her jump.
You don't jump? You're not jumping?
No, man. I'm like... No, I don't know. Hayden I just want to sit and chill. And she likes what, you know, like an audience. She wants me to watch her do a flip or do cartwheels or whatever, you know. And this one here has like the sheets that hang from the ceiling, like Cirque du Soleil, you know, like where you can get into
the silks,
like hang on them. Yeah, they have that, and she likes that a lot.
Nice.
So it's pretty cool. But anyway, I don't know. There's no news, you know. Movies are dead until Dune comes out, I feel like. And I mean, right? There's nothing going on, right? What's going on? Nothing, right?
I don't know. Is that... doesn't feel true. Tell you right, film festival's going on?
Oh, see, like, I don't even know about that. Like, what's playing there?
I have no idea.
Exactly. Nothing not important.
Sorry, it's actually September this year.
What's going on? There you go.
But I mean, like, you know, Tony is out. You got a Matt Johnson film to see.
Yeah,
I do want to see it.
I don't know when I'll have time to do that, but I would like to see it.
I need to see if it's even playing here.
I bet it will be.
I'm sure it is.
Soon. I think it went, you know, wide, but kind of light wide this week. You know, I'm going to go see Teenage Sex and Death at Camp Miasma, I hope.
Yeah, I want to see that too. Oh, and they're playing the final cut of Manhunter in 4K here at the Plaza. And I really want to see that too. So it's just like, I don't know. I need to just take off work for a week and see movies, you know.
I 100% support that.
Do you have like a decent like PTO policy?
I have no idea what it even entails or how. Nobody's told me anything about that yet, and like they just announced maybe yesterday or Thursday like the procedure for getting subs, like for contacting a sub for your, you know, on your off day or whatever. And yeah. But like, I don't even know what the procedure is to call out. Like, I don't even know who I'm supposed to talk to, you know? So, and I, honestly, it would be like totally fucked because my kid goes to the school next door to my school. So I would still have to drive her to school, even if I was sick, you know? And then drive back. And we're like half an hour from the school. So it's like, it's up north. It's in a place called Sugar Hill.
Do you have like her going fancy there? Pants. Like, because you teach right next to it?
No, it's like a happy accident. We just chose the school in the county that was the highest rated middle school. And then it just happened to be, like, literally on the same property right next door. So, and she's been loving it.
Wait, she's already in middle school?
Oh, no. No, I'm teaching elementary school.
Yeah,
okay. I'm middle school. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so it's been really good so far. That part of it. I mean, the drive is a little bit... it's really not that bad. I don't know. I'm really used to it. You know, it's way easier than the drive from Zachary to Baton Rouge in the afternoon. Like, that was way worse. Driving home is, like, no big deal. And I like having a long drive in the morning. I like to get psyched. I like to listen to Stern, you know. Get my day started right. A little humor. I've been listening to... speaking of listening, I've been listening to the new Mountain Goats record. Have you listened to this, JR?
Oh, yeah.
Days, it's so good. I've been really, really, really digging it, like more so than one of their records in a while. And I've got that that song, the best hard rock albums of 2013. I've got that in my head like all day today. All day. It's crazy. Just good stuff.
This one kind of goes down easier than many of the last handful.
Yeah, I was not a fan of the... I don't even remember what the name of it was. The Dragon one, whatever it was called.
Oh, In League with Dragons. Yeah, 2019. Yeah. That was not great. And they had a string there. It was like In League with Dragons, and then Getting Into Knives and Dark in Here. And I was like, am I out? Am I done? But the answer is no. Like the sort of like concept... he actually did like two concept albums in a row. Maybe Day is a concept album too. I don't know. But the Bleed Out one, where like everything's meant to be like a genre movie song, was cool. And then the one about the shipwreck from last year, I liked as well.
Oh, okay. See, I don't even know if I listened to that one. But yeah, I just remember the In League with Dragons was like not. I remember loving the single, that song Younger that was released from it. I was like, this song rocks. And then when the album came out, I was like, all the rest of these songs suck. You know?
Yeah, I like the last song, Sicilian Crest. That might be the I'll only check song that one on that out. Album that I still listen to.
I'll have to check it out. I don't know. I really like almost all the songs on Days.
Mm-hmm.
Are working for me, except for maybe like the Fenario, that song, like where it's like a almost like a pirate sort of thing, like a 1800s
like shanty, a sea shanty folk
song. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It sounds like a Handsome Family song, like a bad Handsome Family song.
he tried to get us with the like the nostalgic titling. You know, it's a going to song. We don't
yeah.
Like the days of old.
Right. Yeah, I'm out. I'm out on that one. But the rest of them are really good. Anyway. All right, well, let's jump into JR's pick this week, you know. Next thing you know, it'll be 1 in the morning for me here. What's JR, why this movie? Why now?
Well, you know, I picked this movie before it was released. And as of this recording, I believe we are, I mean, are we in like weekend number 8 or not 8, 6, something like that?
It might be 8.
This is no longer a new film.
I could be wrong.
Oh, I see what you mean. It's been out for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, I should have pulled this data before, but like, you know, this movie has been out for a while. And I knew that, you know, we weren't all going to see it like right when it was released, but I did. Because I was waiting for this movie. I thought it could be cool. And I remain hopeful that I will like Christopher Nolan films more than I have liked, you know, several of them. You know, his like sort of like epics and action films are not typically my thing, but you know, I try to be an optimistic guy. And yeah, it's like, let's jump into the algorithm 6 or 7 weeks late. That's what I want to do, which is why I will only be talking about The Race of the Cast the entire time.
Good idea.
Very.
All right. Well, I guess first things first. Full say disclosure. It. I watched a cam of this. I did not make it to the theater for this one. I tried to, but I wanted to go to the Plaza because it's showing on 70mm there. Just regular 70, not the IMAX thing. That's only at the Mall of Georgia, and that's like, again, that's sold out. It's insane. It's out of control. And honestly, like, I just don't care enough about this movie to spend the money,
absolutely,
on one of those tickets or to stake out a ticket for the screening. So I even at the Plaza it was like $20, $21, something like that. It's insane. So I was just like, you know what? Let me look, see what's being offered online. And I thought I found a pretty good looking cam, honestly. Like, I mean, pretty solid.
Probably the one that lived on Twitter for 24 hours.
Yeah, it could be. One. I don't know. Yeah, possibly. It did have hard coded some type of foreign language. Now I can't remember what it was, but subs on it. But I don't know. Like, the color reproduction and everything like looked fine. Like, yeah, it was probably just shot on an iPhone or something. I mean, it looked decent. And I get the gist of the movie from that. And I mean, you know what? If it's like, I don't know if that's a problem for people, but
doing something illegal,
whatever. I mean, no, not that. Just like watching, just like from a, not ethically, but like, artistically, like disrespecting Nolan or something, yeah, because you watched his film on camp.
Aesthetic.
Oh, I mean, it is.
Yeah.
Like, I can both say that is sort of like disrespecting the idea of the movie. And I can also say that, like, you know, who cares, whatever. This is now the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time. Like, this, you know, your $20 are missed because, you know, movie studios are greedy, but they're doing okay without you.
Well, yeah, I don't care about that. I'm, you know, that's again, that's like delving into like the ethical question. I just like, the only thing that I at all that I would feel bad about was like, you know, like I would never, I mean, I don't, that's not fair. I've watched cams of other films that were important to me. Like, I watched Dune on cam before it came out because I just couldn't, I just had to see it. I was like, I got to see this movie right now. Like, I can't wait another month to see this fucking thing. And, you know, I don't know. It's just the first viewing is just the first viewing. You know, if it's something is good and worthwhile, you watch it again anyway. And, you know, watch something in streaming or Blu-ray or whatever it is. So how did you guys see the movie, though?
I went to the standard showing at Cinemark. You know, they had like a 70 millimeter showing, but that was like an extra, like, I don't know, $5. And one of the biggest problems for me was like the timing, because, you know, like start time on the one that I saw was like 8:55, so basically 9 o'clock. I didn't get back home until 1:30. You know, like the movie itself is under 3 hours. You know, they made such a big deal about that, but you got to sit through 20 minutes of Cinemark's bullshit and dumb trailers, like the violent version of Green Book that Marky Mark is doing.
Oh God!
Yeah,
I actually have not seen that trailer, I don't think.
Good on you. I like, it's so blatantly obvious that they're trying to do Green Book, but they want to do the violent version. And okay, maybe it's based on a true story, but what the fuck ever? Who gives a shit? Anyway. So yeah, like logistically, like I think, you know, like that's one of the things that I could never fault John for, you know, watching a cam of something, because like it, you know, it throws me back to 2020 and all these, you know, uber successful directors who are just gushing on and on about brick and mortar cinema. And it's like, y'all, my favorite one, you know, my like top 10 favorite movies, I've been lucky to see like, you know, 5 of them in the theater. But like, you know, I don't know when/if I'm ever going to get to see Throne of Blood in the theater, you know, but it's still fucking Throne of Blood. It's still fucking Kurosawa. Like, y'all can't sit here and tell me that just because I didn't sit in a theater to watch Throne of Blood, that somehow I don't get it, or I can't really be, you know, I didn't experience the way Kurosawa wanted me to. I'm sure he just would have been happy that people got to see his movie. So
it's definitely a marketing thing these days to have like the actors. I mean, that's like the big thing you always hear the actors say when they have like these stupid featurette trailers where they're like interviewing, you know, behind the scenes, they'll be like, see it on the biggest screen possible, you know. And it's like, you know, it feels very transparent. It feels like it's not barely about seeing it on a big screen. It's about making sure that people see it in a theater, so they pay to see it in the theater so they can, you know, boost their numbers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm with Kevin. Like, not every movie needs to be seen in the theater. I don't know. You know, it's cool if you have time and money to do that, but if you don't, it's like, just watch the shit at home when it comes out, or watch a cam if you have access to that. Or I mean, not even, I wouldn't say watch a cam. I'm not encouraging people to watch cams. It's a bad idea. But watch, if there's a clean download of it somewhere, grab it, you know.
Yeah. We're talking federal crime here.
Yeah, right.
Like, you know, I don't care that they get actors to market like how you should go to the theater, because the way that we keep getting movies is if people keep paying to see them, and it's not our responsibility to pay to see every one and go to every single one. But like, you know, I like movies. I want movies to exist. The economics are such that they need to be successful in theaters to keep happening. Cause you know, the past couple of years, these studios have figured out the streaming thing is not successful.
I mean, if theaters went away there, it's not like movies would stop existing, though. I mean, there's the streaming model. Like, they're, you know, they're, you're able to distribute films without theaters.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have Avengers, but you would have, you know, you'd have something. You'd still, like, can't, like that teenage Sex and Death of Camp Miasma, that kind of movie can still exist without theaters. On Criterion Channel or something, or movie, you know, or Neon will start their own thing, or you know, or A24, like the, it feels like they would all, there'd be like a, like a theater somehow went extinct. You know, you feel, you just have like a proliferation of streaming for like art house cinema, and it would just go sort of more underground than it is now. And I mean, I for one would love if there were no more Marvel films. Wouldn't that be wonderful? What a great as much as I hate to say it, I will probably talk myself into watching this Doomsday trash because of the X-Men connections, but Jesus, do I not want to.
I mean, Doomsday looks worse to me, just like in previews, than the average Marvel movie. I don't know.
People are all saying the opposite though online. It's like, oh, Marvel's back. It's looking so fucking good. It doesn't, oh my God. I mean,
you know? It doesn't look back. It looks like Marvel's desperate. So I mean, I don't know. And like, I'm into like this. You know, give me the X-Men. Please do give me the X-Men. I like that.
Yeah.
I want that.
I'm into it. Marvel can sell me.
I think if you go to the Doomsday for the X-Men, like, those X-Men are going to be dead in, like, 5 minutes. They're going to be, like, 20 minutes, and then Doom's going to come in, and he's going to kill the...
I don't think
the new people are going to be in Doomsday, except for maybe Sydney Sink.
So you say. I'm actually more hopeful. I'm there for any sort of X-Men lore going forward also. And like, it's not about the old X-Men being in the film at all. Like, I don't.
Okay.
I agree. They're going to be barely in it, and they're going to like have nothing to do with anything. I'm interested in the setup of the new X-Men and how they're introducing them, and like if Christopher Abbott is Professor X, but we see Professor X Patrick Stewart in the trailer, then like, how are they? You know, is it a multiverse thing? Is it just a weak multiverse explanation?
It is a multiverse.
Some sort of like, there's something interesting. So, but it could be something more interesting than that. You don't know that. It could be something more interesting.
Because the Fantastic Four are in a different universe within Marvel than the other superheroes.
Holy Christ.
So the fact that they're...
What a train wreck each other, whole thing is.
It's a multiverse thing. That's why they could be like, oh, shit. Let's have Robert Downey be Doom. Because it's a different universe. And, like, you know, they're not showing Downey's face in the trailers because it's probably going to be this whole stupid moment where he finally takes that mask off and everyone's like, oh, it's fucking Tony, you know?
Which one? They're all fucking named Tony.
It's Tony incredible Danza. That just talking about the format in which we watched The Odyssey got us all the way here.
Sorry.
Yeah. Jared, how did you watch The Odyssey?
I paid to see it in 70, which, it was like $5 extra. And that was mostly due to the time. Like, I kind of went in, like, I'm not going to care what I see it in. I just have to, like, go to the most convenient time because it is a long movie. And I saw it on a week where Sarah was out of town. So it's like, I have to pick up kids from daycare and camp. So like I gotta get into a movie before noon. And I got to the movie theater. It's, you know, like not an Alamo, but like I was like, I gotta I got lunch. Like, I didn't eat anything. I, like, hiked that morning. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm hungry. So I ordered these, like, stupid corn dog nuggets from this theater. And then after I paid for it, they're like, hey, we're out of the corn dog nuggets. We got to, like, get them out of the freezer. It's going to be, like, 8 minutes to get these corn dog nuggets. And I was like, I can do 8 minutes. I got there a little bit early. But at 20 minutes waiting for these corn dog nuggets by the counter, I'm like, hey, can I just get a refund? Like, what the fuck is happening? It was fine. But I finally went in right at the start, actually 2 minutes after the start time, but the theater was like silent. They didn't have any like the shit running, no previews, nothing. So apparently they just didn't have any previews for this showing of the Odyssey. The screen just turned on and the movie started.
So you missed the first 2 minutes of the movie?
No. Like, just...
Oh.
They started the movie late, but, like, they weren't running any of, like, the typical, like, advertisements.
Interesting. And
they did not run any trailers, which I think was a mistake. Or yeah. They don't have any, like, they were like, we don't know how to run things through the, like, the 70 millimeter or something. I don't know. But I imagine, so you ate nothing?
That sounds like a dream, JR.
No, yeah. I ate nothing, but I got no previews. So it was a trade-off.
Yeah.
But yeah, the 70 millimeter was cool. I have not seen a movie projected on film in a long time. And also, I think the audio was not as bad as people have complained about in IMAX, because a lot of people online were like, oh man, like certain scenes just like break your head with how loud they are. And I was like, I didn't experience that at all.
Well, I'm going to ask you guys. So the scene where like they stab the Cyclops in the eye and he finally starts talking, I couldn't understand a word that he was saying. Could y'all?
Wasn't he speaking another language?
I guess.
Were we supposed to understand?
I don't know.
Because I did not get the sense that he
definitely
was...
said he was praying, right? He was definitely saying Zeus and shit. Like, he was like, okay. Or Biden, maybe.
He was
praying to some god.
He was not saying what he says in this poem, which is fine. He's not like, he was not talking to Odysseus. Odysseus did not lie to him about his name. So, like, I just assumed that I was supposed to think that he's praying, and it was.
I
want to
say that he starts rambling, and then one of the soldiers is saying that he's praying.
Yeah, and
like,
then
for
this,
the audience's benefit,
and one of the soldiers is like, "That's okay, Poseidon's son." Although I think he says that once they're out of the cave.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I don't.
It's been a long time, guys. It's been 6 weeks since I saw this.
Yeah. Oh, well, Jesus. I just watched this last week. I don't know. What did you guys think overall? Were you bowled over? Is this the best film of the year? Or?
I think for me, it's like Dune Part 2. It's good.
Mm.
It's solid. But it's not an amazing masterpiece that everyone needs to cream their jeans over.
Okay. Fair enough.
I do not think this is like Dune Part 2, because I think Dune Part 2 is better than this. But, I mean, I like this. I enjoyed the movie. I was never bored after the first 15 or so minutes. Which is kind of, you know, like, we can get into sort of the performances in a bit, but I was struggling at first with the Telemachus stuff. But yeah, I liked most of the people in it. I liked some of the things that they did with this story. And I thought a few of the sort of set pieces were really cool. But I thought this is like a good movie. And that's kind of like where it's good, enjoyable. Yay.
Okay. Well, this is very exciting. Because we finally have a situation where we're going to really disagree here.
Yay!
Wow!
This didn't work for me at all. Just everything you just said, JR, like, none of that worked. Like, all the, like, the set pieces, I did not find, they just don't work. Like, none of them work. And a lot of it just has to do, I feel like a lot of it's, like, editing's fault. Like, this movie is, like, so breakneck paced. I mean, like, they spend 90 seconds in these scenes where, you know, I mean, like, his men are turned into pigs and turned back into men in the span of, like, 3 minutes. I mean, there's no time to spend with any of these things, with any of these moments, to actually feel anything or, you know, be impressed by any part of it or the performances of it, because it's all just, like, we got to fly through this because we really got to make it to the Cyclops part. We got to make it to the next part. We got to make it, you know, they got to get to the Spider-Man. It's just like, it feels like he's trying to, because Nolan is, of course, obsessed with, like, grounding his film, which I never understood. I still don't understand, like, his whole weird thing about, like, he's the guy, he's, like, the realism guy when he made the fucking Batman movies. Like, I don't, you know. But anyway, but it's just like, but he's also like a slave to the narrative somehow. Like it feels like he didn't want to cut anything. Like, I don't know. I've never read the poem, but this version of this has the most shit that I've ever seen in any version of this story. Like, by 10x minimum. 10x.
No.
Okay? Well, it's an insane amount of shit. I know you rewatched the miniseries, the Armand Asante trash from the 90s or whatever. I saw it when I was a kid, and we did watch part of it in my my French class in high school for some reason. I don't remember why, but anyway. Mm. But yeah, I would bet that there's less shit from the poem in that.
No, I can confirm that for you. That is true.
Than there is in this film, because he's just trying to jam every fucking thing in there.
Like, they don't even have the sirens in the miniseries, which I thought was, I thought that was crazy. So, like, we do have 3 hours, you know, in this miniseries. I'm surprised you didn't want to have, like, just because, like, that's like a famous thing. Like, people know the sirens.
Yeah, so of course.
You have the sirens.
It's one of the main, like, the Trojan horse, the sirens, the Cyclops. And the ending, those are, like, the things you have to include, right?
Yeah, I mean,
you could honestly work your way around some of the other stuff. And I understand why he has the things that he has, like, some of the stuff that's, like, disposable to me, like Elliot Page's character. Like, I get why he's in there. And it's, like... like, from a screenwriting perspective, I guess it's, like, clever to have, you know, the connection of all that. But, like, I don't know. Well, it's just, like, it just feels very, like, you could just dump a lot of that shit. And Elliot Page, like, I mean, you know, sorry, pretty bad in the movie. Like, pretty god-awful acting, you know?
I didn't think that.
No? The scene where it's, like, a flashback, and the initial scene where he's attacked at the horse, that's fine. But the scene later on where he's being, like, assigned the duty to watch the horse by Odysseus, and Odysseus says, like, I'll tell your father you were brave or whatever, and then he's like, yeah, and you could, like, add some stuff too. It's like, what kind of a line is that, dude? He didn't write the line, but it was fucking horrible, dude. I don't know. I couldn't handle it. It was brutal. The scene when he comes, when, you know, the Hades scene, he was fine in that. That's actually the one scene in the film that I was sort of like, I don't know. I could have done with a lot more of that. And just, like, the way that...
I think the Hades,
like,
scene
I
is
love
good.
The idea of... I think it's good. I like the way that... I love the idea of them going to speak to the dead to get, you know, to figure out what's going on or to figure out their next steps. And I just hate how it devolves, though, into, like, a zombie thing at the end where they're all getting chased by, like, these ghosts. So that it's just so stupid. It's just like, well, you know, it was so interesting until then. And I loved that all the when what's his face? Agamemnon's telling his story.
About
how he was killed. Like, I thought all that worked really well.
Your boy Benny.
But again, it's like 45 seconds of the movie. I mean, it's immediately, it's like you see it, there's a flashback, it's done. Now they're being chased on the beach. Let's go! It's being chased on the beach. It's, you know, I don't know. And just real quick, the only other main, the sort of main thing that I have a problem with outside of the pacing, and the pacing is the main thing, is Matt Damon's performance. Like, I feel like I hear Matt Damon, you know, people liking this performance, but he is so fucking wooden and monotone throughout this entire performance. And the only time he shows emotion is when he's screaming with the siren scene, which is totally ridiculous. But he's, you know, that's the only scene he shows any sort of, all the rest was just like him. Some of his lines, genuinely, they sound like they were typed into ChatGPT, and ChatGPT was asked to say this line like Matt Damon would say it. And then ChatGPT said it completely emotionless because it's a computer, you know? Like, that's literally what it sounded like. Whenever those guys kill the calf or whatever to eat it, and it's the sun god's calf or whatever, and he chastises them, he's like, he walks in, did you guys really think that the sun god wouldn't notice one of his calves missing? And it's just like, what is this? Aren't you the leader of this group? I don't know. I didn't understand the direction for him to be so soul dead, you know? Sorry, that's my, I kind of hated it.
Well, I mean, in that particular instance, like, he is soul dead at that point because yeah, roll your eyes because you're Mr. I don't care, I don't like it.
No, I'm not saying that. It's not one of those things where it's like you could say, actually, it makes sense thematically because his character has gone through a lot. But it's like,
told them all that they're gonna die if they do this.
Of course, that all makes sense.
He's been explicit.
That makes sense, right? Perfect. So how do you reconcile that with this other character, right? How Odysseus becomes somebody who's totally different the minute he sees that they're, oh, we're coming to the sirens? Tie me to the mast, dude, because I want to hear the siren song. I want to be the only guy in history who's heard the siren. Like, yeah. Who is this guy?
I can't justify that. I think that is really dumb. And part of, like, I understand what Nolan was trying to cut out of the adaptation there. It was like, he limited Cersei's part. Like, Cersei tells him to do that in the poem. And I don't really remember why she tells him to do that. Cersei's also the one, like, they go back to Cersei after Hades in the poem. And she tells him all about Charybdis and stuff. But I think he was just like, I need this scene. I don't want to have Cersei have give him meaningful direction because she's not giving him other meaningful direction. So yeah, fuck it. We just have to decide Damon's a weird idiot right here.
Well, also, like, funnily enough, it like him being cocky in that moment is actually kind of thematically appropriate, because again, you know, like, think, like, yeah, for like as much shit that is in this movie, like, you know, and people will be like, no, that's the Iliad, it's just the Odyssey, blah, blah, blah. And fuck you, you're an asshole. But like, Odysseus, like, tried to feign insanity so that Agamemnon wouldn't drag him into this bullshit. And, you know, they're like, Odysseus, you're the smartest fucking guy in these goddamn islands. Knock this shit off or we're gonna, you know, do whatever. And so, you know, that's, you know, that ends up being why, you know, he's, you know, dragged along on the expedition. But yeah, they just, you know, they quote unquote ground it because, you know, he'll kill you all and he just wants the trade routes and this, that, and the other and, you know, whatever.
This kind of gets into like the if you guys have seen like the criticisms from the Odyssey and Iliad translator Emily Wilson.
Oh yeah.
Where she's been very critical of this movie, and like she.
I just heard this. Right. Yeah, I just heard she didn't like it, but.
Yeah, and like she's right, like all the like you know she spent her life with these texts translating them like cool she's allowed to not like that he changed things, but you know the stuff about Damon where or the stuff about Odysseus where he is super cocky and incredibly intelligent, like that is not a part of this movie character like at all. So in that moment where all of a sudden he is cocky, it's dumb. And like
yeah.
I don't dislike the scene. Like I like the way the scene is staged. But yeah, it's like it doesn't make any sense with what we know of Damon's or what we have seen of Damon's character. I don't know. I mean there's I guess I just like I'm not gonna argue a ton about like performance stuff just because I didn't like love any performance, but I also didn't dislike any performance outside of I think Holland, who also was just like he's playing my least favorite character. I don't really know what, you know, I don't know how he could have won me over, because I also think the guy who plays Telemachus in The Return is like he's like the worst performance in that too. So maybe I just don't like that character and what he's got going on. But I, you know, some of the stuff that Nolan added and like the, you know, going back to the Hades thing with the chasing out, it's like, yeah, I don't like that he found a way to turn that into an action scene because that isn't as cool as what was going on. But I also am like, he clearly felt like he wanted something to visualize Odysseus's guilt, and I guess like all the dead soldiers literally chasing after you because you've not buried them well. It's like I get that, don't love it, I get the choice.
I like the only part of it that the film that works thematically for me at all is the guilt stuff. I love the idea that he's guilty about what he like the Trojan horse like being deceptive. I think that's a really cool idea. Like I've never read the piece, I don't know, I'm assuming that's in there. That he feels guilty about that? It's not?
No.
Okay, so that's good.
There's no
like,
guilt
that's
at
a
all.
Smart addition. Okay, well, that's a really smart addition, and I like that a lot. I sort of wish that, like... To be fair, you know, that's... Is that part of the new translation? Is that, like, somehow hinted at?
No, and Emily Wilson also hates that part, too. She's like, you have completely modernized this telling, because, like... The idea of hating war, feeling guilty for killing people, very modern, in no
way part
of the
story. Feeling guilty for killing people is not the same as what's actually happening there. Like, he's not guilty about having killed people. He's guilty about the deception of, you know, doing, like,
yeah,
breaking in and killing
law.
Them, right?
No.
Which I think is a cool idea.
What he does in the Odyssey is he brags about that. Like, whenever that comes up, he brings it up as he brings up often how smart he is, and it's like, I will get us out of this, just like I got us away from the Cyclops by lying to him, just like I got us out of Troy by deceiving the Trojans. Like, it's like, he brags about it.
I will say, I can't give Nolan credit for it, though, because, like, there is a... That regret is in. I rewatched Nostos: The Return also, and that the element of regret for the Trojan War is in there also.
Yeah.
But it's a cool idea, and I did like some of the scenes dealing with that. And I just I feel like the Hades scene would have been so much more maybe powerful and effective if we had that expressed through dialogue rather than just like this. Sort of like bonehead image of his soul, the ghost of his soldiers chasing him on a field. I don't know.
And unfortunately, it's the fourth time, I think, at that point where they've been chased back to the boat. You know, it's like, like we are repeating an image or an idea. The chasing back
but
to the boat.
But the scene where the scene at the end or near the end when he's still hiding from everyone and he's getting his feet washed or whatever by the maid or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Servant. I thought that was really like that his whole speech there, it worked for me. And you know, it's I mean, I can go on and on about the actual ending and the sort of action scene that follows that, but up until that action scene, I think it's probably it's where the film is at its strongest for me, performance wise for sure, and just thematically and everything.
I think
all that stuff works really well.
I think the fight in the hall is the worst looking of the scenes. Maybe outside of like Charybdis, I think like you don't see a lot of Charybdis because they were aware that they made Charybdis look bad. Like that scene didn't look
good. What is Charybdis?
Charybdis is the monster coming out of like there's the whirlpool thing.
Oh,
and then the monster eating people is Charybdis.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like shit. Which is, again, that's another, you know, thing that Nolan's so anti-CG. It's just bizarre. Like he shoots around the Cyclops so much, and he shoots around all sorts of other things that he just doesn't want to use CG with. But it's like he's afraid to use practical effects too. Like he's afraid to show the Cyclops. I don't know how, you know, however they would have done that in, you know, 1989 or whatever. He wouldn't do that. He'll just shoot around it instead. He just won't show us, you know, or he'll use just nothing but forced perspective all the time. And it's just, but then he'll have the Charybdis thing. He'll have this completely CG creature that's in broad daylight. I just don't understand what the thought process is, you know?
Mm. So I don't know if you guys saw this same stuff, but like I saw like a few posts about people talking about Samantha Morton as Cersei. They were talking about it was like a once in a generation performance, and
no, they're out of their minds.
No. Like personally, I think the best acting in the movie is Anne Hathaway.
I've heard that too, though. I've heard people praising her.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and maybe it's not a high bar to clear, but like I think she's the one who like goes on an emotional journey and expresses it in a consistent way. And
she definitely cries a lot.
I mean
that's impressive.
I thought not a big fan of Leguizamo's thing. I thought Bernthal was Bernthal, but like it worked for Menelaus, if that makes any sense.
I mean,
and like I thought
I'm just sick of seeing Bernthal, but yeah, sure.
I 100% yeah. Get that. And I thought Safdie, like when he's actually has some acting to do in the Hades scene. And it's not just, you know, the armor that's doing all the work. I thought he was good.
See, I like that idea. I like the idea that it is the armor doing the work, right? Because Benny Safdie is like this slight guy, and
yeah.
It felt like very intentional casting, that we are going to present this image with this armor, and this man is very much not that. Again, just I like the idea, not so much that I cared about Safdie's performance, but
yeah, I mean,
I liked Leguizamo and I liked Morton, and again, I'm not saying that I love them, and I also saw the stuff about Morton as being like super special. I was like, I don't think it's super special. I liked it. I thought the way they visualized them turning into pigs, I thought that was cool. I liked it. I thought it was gross. The way that they like pulling like the faces. And you know, like I also thought sort of like the reverse, it looked like they were sort of like what do you call this when you just like play the film back in reverse?
They were, like spitting the food out. And yeah. And
just, like, the way that they did that, I was like, oh, like, they're finally letting something in the movie kind of be, like a fun idea, right? Because it's meant...
Yeah.
Like, it looks ridiculous, and I think it's meant to.
Therein lies the issue, though, right? Therein lies the issue that Dolan has a handful of great ideas, and they're strewn over this three-hour film, and they're powered through in 15 seconds until we can get to the next scene that's not interesting at all.
Yeah.
Or the next scene where Tom Holland is, you know, sounding like Anton Yelchin more and more every time I fucking hear his voice. I don't understand. And everybody has them. I don't understand I'm not one of these people who's like, oh, it's an epic, ancient epic. They should all be British accents, and there should be nothing but white people on the screen, or, you know, or women shouldn't be able to fight or something. I'm not one of these people. This is fine. It's an interpretation. It's a fictional story. It's fine. But I don't understand. I want to hear what the rationale is for having everyone do goofy American accents. I don't get it. And it doesn't work. It breaks the film in many, many places. Especially, like you say, with Tom Holland. Like, it feels like a troll move. You know what? Actually, we're going to go so far in the other direction, we're going to have him say dad. And we're not just going to do it once. We're going to do it like 15 times. Every time he talks about Odysseus, he say, that's my dad. It's just like, it's insane. Like, why would you do that? I'm going to challenge myself. I want to make him say dad and have it be good and work. And it's like, it's impossible. It does not work.
It's like, unfortunately, like, it's like you need that family to have the same accent. Although, you know, he didn't grow up with his dad there. But, you know, like, these people from they're all from, like, different islands and stuff. Like, same accent? But it's just like I say, them all having different accents because they're not all from the same fucking place.
You don't need to justify it. How many times have we seen Arnold Schwarzenegger married to an American woman and playing a very American character, and we don't even think about his accent for the entirety of the film? Nobody cares. It's never brought up.
It's a different time, you know? Yeah. This time that we're in now is all about, you know, people on the internet being psychotic and, like... It took me out of the movie that someone had a different accent. Like, no, it didn't. Shut the fuck
but
up.
I don't disagree that, like, them having American accents does sort of take you out of the movie. Not more so than the casting. The casting is the main thing that takes me out of the film. Recognizing every single face on screen is a problem, okay? I'm unable to suspend disbelief at all during the film, because every single scene has a $20 million actor on the screen. You know what I mean? And I'm just like, I can't, what is this movie? Like, I can't, it's like watching a fucking, it's like what Scorsese said about Marvel films. They're like fucking theme park rides. This was what this felt like to me. Like, all of a sudden we got Zendaya showing up for 5 seconds so they can sell more tickets to the Marvel crowd. I just don't, you know, and I didn't have any problem with her being in the movie, but it's just like, and I like the idea of him, you know, hallucinating Athena or whatever's happening there. But it's just like, are we afraid to cast just like a normal person? Or like just an unknown actor, or like a lesser known actor even? I mean, I don't know.
He's probably going back to, you know, friggin', you know, the Ten Commandments, you know, movies like that, where you got friggin', you know, you've got Heston, you've got Vincent Price, you've got Edward G. Robinson, you've got all these, at the time, you know, major people that the audiences would have recognized. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, saying that we're in a different time from the 90s, we're definitely in a different time from the 50s, right? So, I don't know how successful that is.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's like the same arguments, like when, you know, they got to put people that people know.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No, I agree. I mean, he's justifying his budget.
Yeah. At least he's not pulling that bullshit that he did with Dunkirk. Like, I never heard of Harry Styles. I didn't know who he was. Get fucked, Nolan.
But Harry Styles is essentially an unknown entity in that film. He hasn't acted before. So, like, I don't have an issue with him casting Harry Styles at all. Dunkirk is one of the films where he's got barely anybody in it. You know, I mean, there are people you recognize, but they're not huge fucking stars. Mm. And, I mean, you know, unless you're Anglophile and you just love Kenneth Branagh. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's just, for me, it was distracting. The casting was very distracting for me. It was. I don't know. I would have preferred to see, like, much fewer faces. And, like, can you imagine? Just, I don't know. Like, just even in Odysseus, I don't know. Matt Damon's such a bizarre choice to me to play Odysseus. Like, even having, and he's been on a run with Cillian Murphy. Like, why not have Cillian Murphy in there? That would be interesting.
I don't think Cillian Murphy is as good as Matt Damon. I'll say it.
You don't? I don't necessarily think
Cillian Murphy's... In general.
No, in general, I think Matt Damon's a great actor. But I don't know that he's right for playing the ancient Greek hero of heroes, you know? I don't know. It doesn't feel right to me, but... And he definitely didn't pull it off in my eyes. But, I mean, I know a lot of people have been saying he's great, and I don't know. This is clearly just I'm on an island here, but... Yeah, I don't know. Just wasn't working for me. And I mean, I guess we can, if you guys want to get into the final scene, the action sort of killing of the suitors scene, yep. Which I imagine in the poem was closer to the miniseries, JR, where they just execute everybody, like the return, sort of like the return and Ralph Fiennes' character and his son just killing everyone, right? Yeah. Was that more like the poem? Yeah.
Yes, and I mean, in the poem, he does literally execute. He's like, every slave that slept with one of the suitors, you're executed. Hang them now. He's intense about it. But yeah, like this. I don't know why. For some reason, the staging of this scene and just the way it looks in the firelight, I just thought it did not look good.
It definitely feels the action, like the choreography of it feels so modern, just like how he refuses to use other weapons besides arrows. Like, I don't get that. His whole thing where he's like, he's taking arrows and like stabbing guys with them, like he's fucking Legolas, you know? I mean, it's just,
well, I mean,
who, it leads me to like,
Who's to say that Nolan wasn't watching fucking The Two Towers and going, yeah.
Yeah, that's badass, dude. I'm gonna do that.
That's what we need. Oh, and speaking, like, real quick. So, like, the ending where he's, like, you know, making this whole big thing about we're the people from the sea, this, that, and the other.
This is the actual worst line of the movie, but continue.
Well, yeah. So... I don't know, but at the end of The Bright Sword by Lev Grossman, there's, you know, like the whole book, like they've been trying to like find some way to bring King Arthur back and to restore England to its former glory. And one of the things, like, they're seeing Saxons, they're seeing Vikings, they're seeing, you know, this group of people, that group of people. They're seeing England change in, you know, like England can't ever be the same again, et cetera, et cetera. I'm wondering if Nolan read The Bright Sword and was like, This could be so reaching, but this was my personal. I was like, hey, wait a minute. Because I maintain that he ripped off the ending of Tenet from Doctor Who. The whole thing of them going in opposite directions in their relationship. That is totally Doctor Who and River Song. And I won't buy for a second that he didn't know that that was a thing.
There's that that like meme sort of thing that goes around about Inception too, that he stole the idea from Inception from
Paprika.
DuckTales. No, from DuckTales. I mean, the idea of implanting, incepting the idea, not the scene. Yeah, obviously he was visually referencing Paprika, but But I don't have a problem with that. I don't know. I've never read The Bright Sword, but I could totally see him. I mean, I can see, you know, that's what you do when you're an artist of any kind, I guess, is just like sort of you're inspired by things, right? But I mean, it's whether or not it works, you know, at the end of the day. And I mean, if it works for you, that's great. And I particularly that sort of final scene after the action, I mean, I don't, you know, it's fine. I don't know. What's the line that you were saying is bad, JR?
It's the, it's almost like this, like a meta moment. The idea that Damon, like, knows the future, that they're going to lose writing and songs will be how these stories are passed down to future generations. Oh, yeah, I was like, fuck off with that. it's just like it's so on the nose, like the idea that, like, you know, like we are going to be the reason, like we're trying to make this empire better, this world better, and we're going to be the reason that it falls apart. But then, like, here's me just like knowing that it's going to fall apart. I was like, oh god, go to hell.
No, that reminds me too of the actual worst performance in the film. Travis Scott as the Bard just got awful. Oh. Like, what a cool idea. Like, what a great, like, sound, feels inspired, right? We'll have this rapper, this hip-hop star, be the guy who sings the song of Odysseus, but it's, like, so poorly conceived and delivered. It's, like, it's the lamest thing.
It is lame. It is, you're right, it is lame. Just everything, not everything in the castle, because I also like Dan Hathaway fine, but just the shit in the castle is just not as interesting as the shit outside of the castle. And, you know, to your point about recognizable faces, I was like, yeah, why is this Mia Goth? Why is this Mia Goth? No, it's not like she's, you know, like an expensive talent, but it's just like, you know, like, you haven't given this character anything interesting to do, which means it should not be Mia Goth, because Mia Goth is interesting. You know, like, she's a weirdo who does weird movies. So now you've got me wondering, in what ways is this girl going to be weird?
Mm.
Well, she's not.
Yeah, it's strange, right? Because he puts her in the middle of this, like, a love triangle with these other two huge stars. But then it's like he knows, but then he knows enough to say, okay, Robert Pattinson is the main suitor. He's the villain. Like, he's the main guy, right? And he knows enough to cast a sort of much lesser known actor as the second suitor, Corey Hawkins, right?
But like, he chose the worst. I fucking hate Corey Hawkins. I hate him so fucking much.
What?
Drove me crazy. I don't know, man. Really? I just, the shit that I've seen him in, like Six Underground.
He's great in Tragedy of Macbeth.
Voyage of Demeter. Like, I hate this guy. He's the worst part of In the Heights, which is not a great movie, but it's like, get this guy off of the fucking screen. I cannot stand him. Because, like, he's not talking about how he's bad. I just hate him.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, yeah, there's actors like that that you have just a disdain for, and it's ineffable. Far as you guys, like, I liked Leguizamo in the film. I just like seeing him given such a prominent role and seeing that he can, you know, he can still sort of, he can act, you know. The guy's good. I don't know. I will say, like, why is the movie rated R? Like, I don't waiting for there to be some kind of, like,
there's no moment blood
of, like, tits or something. I mean, there's barely any blood. There's, like, one scene where a guy, like, a flashback of Troy, like where a knife hits a guy's throat and you see blood spray for like a split second. But it's like, that's PG-13 shit for me. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, did anyone curse? I don't, I mean, again, I'm too far away from it.
No,
I don't
somebody remember says, cursing. Somebody says fuck. Somebody says fuck, like get off the fucking beach or something like that. Get off this fucking beach.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's like one, you know, it's like, that doesn't count. And, I was really expecting there to be like nudity, and there just was no nudity at all.
Charlize was not naked.
No, I mean, it feels like if they had made this movie 15 years ago, she would have been. But, you know.
Yeah. The score. The only thing remember, the only thing I can really remember about the score is like, okay, you watched, you listened to a lot of passion. A lot of passion by Peter Gabriel for this thing.
That's so funny. Just because I
could see that.
I could never, I could have never come up with that register or anything. That's just really funny.
Well, I mean, but I don't know.
That's
like
Kevin.
Well, I wonder, I do wonder sometimes if it's just me, because like a lot of these, you know, like kind of synthy, but kind of, you know, ethnic scores, like I wonder, like, is everybody just ripping off Peter Gabriel? Like, because like to me it sounds like they are, and I could be just totally out of my mind on this. Maybe I'm hearing different.
I don't
things.
Think you're out of your mind. I think there's other influences too, though. Like Vangelis and
oh yeah, you're right.
You
right.
know. Giorgio Moroder and things like this, like that's influencing a lot of the synthwave shit that we're hearing in scores now, I feel like. And then you've got like people who are like totally you know, using synths totally differently than that, like Michael Levy and Arca or whatever. But the I thought the score was fine as sort of like, you know, nondescript until toward the end they started adding all that synth stuff, and I thought that was pretty, like, I would have preferred more synth, like more sort of modern instrumentation, because if anything, then it would have made more sense to say, you know, we're trying to do this like sort of half ancient grounded but also modern retelling with American accents and major Hollywood stars, and I don't know, but I just feel like he threw a lot of shit at the wall and not all of it stuck, and
yeah.
It's sort of like everything I don't like about Nolan in a movie. So, you know, for me, it just doesn't work, and it's a 2.
Oh, you're calling it. You're like, we're done. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, we're done. No, I'm just kidding. Well, I mean, if there's more you want to talk about, feel free. I'm just.
I mean, we've been talking for about an hour.
Yeah, but we spent like 20 minutes on X-Men somehow.
Yeah, well. I mean, we don't call it a deep dive for nothing.
Jer is mad that his movie choice isn't warranting
no.
even more discussion.
I am not mad at all. Because, again, like my great insight for this review has just been like, that's like, it's pretty cool. Some of it's cool.
Yeah.
Some of it's cool, some of it's dumb. You know, like,
yeah.
Because like, I'm just kind of right in the fucking middle with this movie, and unfortunately, it is the stuff from Nolan that I don't like, mixed with some of the stuff from Nolan that I do. Because like, you know, I'm probably gonna put this movie ahead of like the Batman movies and Inception, but I'm still gonna give it the same rating that I gave those movies, which, you know, is a 3. Like, this is a 3 out of 5 for me. Enjoyed it. Imperfect. Some cool stuff, some dumb stuff.
And I mean, to be fair, I could totally see watching this movie like 5 years from now, like rewatching it, outside of the hype train that's going on with it, and being like, okay, maybe I was a little clouded at that moment. It's not quite as bad as that.
Well,
but I don't know if that's going to happen. Maybe it'll be worse. Who knows?
I, you know, like, I spent enough time on some of the awful corners of the internet that, like, all these people that are, like, being, like, there's no Troy, because that's such a good fucking movie. Troy is a piece of shit. Troy fucking sucks. There is nothing good about Troy. There are only bad things about Troy, right? Every memorable aspect of Troy is something that is bad and stupid. Like I
remember loving Eric Bana. I remember loving Eric Bana in Troy, but that was it.
I don't. But and then same thing with the miniseries, right? Like people saying like this isn't any better than the miniseries. I'm like, it is. It is better. And you know, like is there anything cool about the miniseries? I don't know. Maybe, but not much. Not much of it's cool.
Oh, hey, I did see a clip from the miniseries on TikTok. And I will say that one thing I loved was Odysseus is like in disguise as the beggar or whatever. And he's got like a big beard and everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as they realize it's him, it cuts to him and he's like clean shaven and he's got the slick back hair. He's like, "Do you know me now?" And I was like, "That's a fucking good moment, dude." I like that a lot.
I do actually like that. I do like that. And honestly, like, you know, Isabella Rossellini's never bad, and she is in a couple scenes as the, you know, Athena. Mm-hmm. But again, that is also like a waste of time for 3 hours. And I guess the point of this is you should watch The Return. Everyone just go watch The Return with Ralph Fiennes doing incredible shit. That movie's wonderful. And it's a normal length movie.
Nice.
Kevin, your rating?
3.5.
Cool.
All right. I see guess. This one on your end of year list.
Yeah.
This is it's not on my end of year list. It's not gonna get anywhere near it. That feels good. I would not like to have a Nolan in my end of year list. I have a brand to secure. I'm like, well, where is this? I'm going to add it to my list right now. Where is it going? It's going right by Project Hail Mary. That feels fitting.
Mine's going right. What do they give Project Hail Mary?
Below the dink with Jake Johnson. That's
fair.
Above Project Hail Mary.
I'm putting it... Now, this is going to be weird. I'm going to put it in between Project Hail Mary and Obex. Even though I gave Obex a higher rating, I'm going to put Odyssey higher than... Because I feel like what it's... These are, you know, very disparate films. Obex is a micro-budget sci-fi, so... Yeah. But, anyway... Well, that leads us right into the homework, which JR promised he would watch.
And I
James Mangold's I Night and Day.
I know. Oh, I fucked fucker. Up. I was too tired. I had back to school night Thursday, and I couldn't do it. But then I turned on a movie anyway. It was
unbelievable.
This fucking Hamlet.
This guy.
But like, because I didn't have Night and Day, and it's not like I couldn't even rent it. Anywhere I had to download it.
The Riz Ahmed Hamlet?
Yeah, I watched that. It's pretty good. I liked it. All
right.
Good. And then
good for you, bud.
Last night I went to a Rockies game with my friend, and you know, after a couple beers, ended up walking all the way home because the Ubers were so expensive. And I got home and I still had to do the dishes, and I was just like, I'm toast. And so I failed. I will do it. I'm not the first guy to fuck up this homework. I won't be the last guy to fuck up this homework, but I will do it. And I do, you know, submit myself to the humiliation ritual of apologizing for this.
If only there was some way to actually punish you guys when you don't watch the film. I don't know how to do it though. All I could think of was like, we just gotta make you watch more films, but then you just won't watch those either. So it's like,
The problem was, I fucked up over the summer, obviously. Like, I just completely forgot about Night and Day, I could not fit it into this last week when you reminded me, because obviously I was totally free to watch whatever I wanted over the summer, and I fucked it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really should be a situation, I feel like, and I've thought about this before for myself, where once the film is assigned, you shouldn't watch anything until you watch that film, just so you know it's done.
Hey,
you know? All right.
I will live by that rule. I will not watch another movie. I will not watch another movie until I watch Night and Day.
Who knows? You might love it. Might be the action masterpiece slept on, you know, Tommy
Mango
Cruise.
Mango is so good. You know? I love all of Mangle's movies. Like Identity.
I think I've only seen... He did Logan, right?
Yeah, he did.
I think that
he
might
did.
Be the only... I think that might be the only one I've seen by him.
He did Copland. Copland is his only good movie.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably would say that Ford vs. Ferrari is probably the movie of his I like the most. I've never seen Copland.
No, Copland's good. And what's the other one that he did that was good? I loved Identity when I was a kid, but who knows? It's probably trash.
I really... Identity, I think, is probably very bad, but I absolutely loved it.
Me too.
As a teenager.
Yeah.
It might be time for a reevaluation of that one. Yeah. Oh, and let's then I didn't mind the Bob Dylan movie. That was okay. So. Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say, JR, you know. Copland is at least worth watching so that you can, you know, kick some ass on Cinematrix. Because every time I've played Copland on anything... It's always been like super low. So,
yeah.
Like, friggin' De Niro, Stallone, bunch of people.
All right.
Yeah.
I will take that advice eventually.
All right. Let's move on then, since we couldn't depend on JR to do his homework. So we'll have to just move on with that and forget about it. And, you know, one of us will have to discuss something we watched. So whoever wants to do that is free at this time.
It can't be me first. So
okay, I agree. You,
so well, I
you're
can,
the worst.
So I watched a bunch of Disney and one actual not Disney movies from like the late 90s, early aughts. Some of these I hadn't seen before, so I was giving them a try for the first time. Hadn't seen Treasure Planet before. It was fine. And Road to El Dorado, Pocahontas, Hunchback of Notre Dame. Second watches, but also, you know, decent. And finally watched Fantasia 2000, which not crazy about. The last bit where they chop up the Firebird suite is actually pretty good, but the rest of it is like, all right, you've got computers to do animation. That's cool.
Yeah.
And sorry, you know, apologies to all the cinephiles out there, but I finally got around to watching A Woman Under the Influence, the Cassavetes film, and it's good, but like I do not get the hype, and I will also say like. Everything I've seen about A Woman Under the Influence talks about, you know, Gina Rowlands' performance. Why is nobody talking about Peter Falk? Peter Falk is doing so much in this movie.
So you're mad at his reputation?
He's doing
because a woman is centered.
I mean,
yeah, what's with this woke shit, dude? Let's give the credit where the credit's due to the man.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Falk is great in it.
I've heard people talk about how good Falk is in it.
Okay.
I mean,
well,
I think Jenna Rollins is just doing something that's. I mean, I don't know. I'm very impressed by her performance in that. Kevin's not interested. I don't know. And I think that it's just raw, you know? It's just so fucking raw, that movie. And that's what people respond to about it, I feel like.
I guess so. But, like, I don't know. Like, I wonder how many of these people watch it, like, as parents. And, like, as people who have, like, been, you know, dealt with people who have, you know, neurodivergence or whatever. One of the like Google, you know, AI prompts is like, what mental illness does Gina Rollins have in A Woman Under the Influence? I didn't look at that. But like the way Peter Falk is reacting to her the whole time, it's like, who's the one who has the real problem? And like, you know, Gina Rollins acts, you know, off, but like not in a like absurdly like worrying kind of way. She's not giving beer to her children like Peter Falk. You know?
Like, you know, it's a different time though, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Now you're sounding woke yourself, see? I don't know.
Well, yeah.
You can't give your kid a little beer? I don't know.
I know, right? You know? It's like you can't say anything anymore. So, yeah, like, watching this movie, I was, like, I was just so confused about everything that was going on. I was like, man, like, because it's not like, you know, you take a movie like, I don't know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or like The Snake Pit with Olivia de Havilland, where they're like, you know, taking mental illness and like exaggerating it and making it, you know, obvious that like people don't know what the fuck to do. Peter Falk obviously doesn't know what to do, but nobody else does either. And at the same time, it's like, okay, well, things are obviously not right in their marriage, but like the way they're examining what Rollins and Falk, you know, like their characters, it's like, I don't know. It's like,
it didn't work for you. It's like The Odyssey for me. It just didn't work.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't get it.
Maybe on your rewatch. You gotta rewatch it.
Maybe.
All right. I went to the place called The Cosm in Atlanta here, and we saw Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And The Cosm is like it's sort of like the thing in Vegas, the Sphere.
Oh.
But it's not nearly as big as that, and it's. But I mean, it is like the same sort of idea. Like it's this half sphere that you're sort of sitting inside of, and it's a screen. And like the movie's sort of playing in the center of the screen in a box, and then around it there's all this cheap CG, you know, candy falling, and then like you see the town, and then like at night, like in the night scenes, like the lights will go down on the town, and then like the Wonka sign comes on. It's kind of fun, you know. It's cool. And they had food there, and it was ridiculously expensive, but it was good. Tasted really good. And so rewatched Willy Wonka. It's always fun, always a blast. Gene Wilder's so fucking good, and you know, pretty kind of dated parts of it, really dated, but other parts very timeless. So overall, pretty solid little picture. 3.5 out of 5. Jer?
Let's get into it. So after seeing The Odyssey, of course, the marketing worked. I had to go see Spider-Man, Brand New Day.
What? Sorry, I was talking to Amelia. What'd you say?
I said the marketing of The Odyssey worked. I went and saw Spider-Man Brand New Day starring Tom Holland.
Oh, of course.
And Zendaya.
Anyway. Yeah.
Well, John, you know, let's do a little spoiler. You want some X-Men lore set up, you got to go see it too.
Like, is it, X-Men this, in it. This is the Sadie Sink thing, right? She's in it.
Sadie Sink is a member of the X-Men, a future member of the X-Men.
Jean Grey.
Yeah, I already know this. Not interested. Don't care. Yeah. Not worth it.
I had heard this. Yeah, I wasn't sure how it was going to... She's not good in Spider-Man? She's whatever. I think it's the first time I've ever seen her. I think.
She's in the
whale. You didn't see the whale?
Yeah.
Or Stranger Things? Whale? Yeah,
she's like the daughter in the whale.
I don't think I got... I only watched the first season of Stranger Things. I don't think she's in that. Okay.
No, she's not. She shows up in the second one.
Okay. But, I mean, like, Spider-Man Brand New Day is, like, I'm going to see the Spider-Man movie. I like Spider-Man. Every Tom Holland Spider-Man movie has been, like, whatever. Except for the meme one, which I thought was lame. This movie is slop for sure, just visually. It is gross and falls into all of the sort of like traps of just like, we've got these character cameos. Like, the Hulk is in this movie for some reason. It's not a good reason. It's not. The Punisher is in this movie just because, like, I guess, again, they wanted... Tom Holland wanted to work with Bernthal again or something. This is my first time seeing The Punisher, by the way. I never saw that character from, like, the Netflix shows.
Mm.
And I didn't like him. And then I also, like, last week, I was like, yeah, I'll throw on that that Punisher, like... hour-long thing that came out of Disney Plus. I was like, that can't be too bad, right? That was just like that was a fucking abortion of a piece of visual media. That was so bad. I hated that so much. It's just like, it's like more of the John Wick thing of just like, it's 100 dudes he has to kill, but that's it. That's it. Ew. That's all it is. Just dudes running at him in this apartment complex, and he has to kill him. It's gross. Anyway, I really wasn't sure what the Spider-Man was going to do with his plot. There are aspects of it that probably could have been cool, but were done poorly. And it just feels like a Spider-Man movie that's meant to set up other movies. Like, This wasn't a real movie, but it was 2.5 hours and looked like shit. Yeah, there it is. Spider-Man, Brand New Day.
All right, Kevin?
So I rewatched Orson Welles' Macbeth, and it's like, it went up a little for me.
Yeah.
Now he walks away. I remember, John, I remember telling you that, like, the scene where, like, they come in to kill Macduff's wife and son, like, I remember feeling, like, disturbed watching that. And, yeah, again, same thing. You don't even really see anything. Like, just the violence of this guy, like, bringing down his arm with the knife in his hand, like, just gave me like serious chills. Like, oh no, he killed that kid. And you literally do not see anything. There's no gore in this movie. There's no, you don't see any knives going into anybody. But yeah, like, it was disturbing. So props to Orson Welles, and I would you know, they didn't have the means back then, but like I would have loved to have seen his like he did a thing that they ended up calling Voodoo Macbeth, where it was like,
oh yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's like it's set in Haiti, it's got an all black cast, it like had a, you know, premiered in Harlem. I would love to see that. Like, that's one of those, like, if I could go back in time to like do something, like that's one of the things I would want to do.
Totally. That'd be super cool.
Yeah.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
I think it's always interesting when any filmmaker adapts Shakespeare and like inserts cultural stuff in there. Or like reimagines aspects of it in some sort of culture that's not, you know, Anglo. Like, I think Riz Ahmed's really interesting. Hamlet. Yeah, like Riz Ahmed's Hamlet's a great example. Yeah, that's a cool idea, you know. Anyway, I watched rewatched Air Bud. Was alone with Amelia for a night last Friday, and was just like, you know, we're going to have movie night. We made popcorn and shit, and we had pizza, and then we watched, I was like, you got to watch a movie. And like I didn't realize it, but every like movie from my childhood is a sports movie. Like, they're all sports films.
Yeah.
Like, I made her watch Sandlot and the Mighty Ducks, and I showed her the Little Giants trailer and the Rookie of the Year trailer. I'm just like, why are all these? I really never thought of it. And Air Bud's not from my childhood. I was too old for this movie when it came out. But I did see it at some point on video. Maybe when my sister was a kid. I don't know. And I remember thinking, wow, this is a really bad movie. But there has like one funny moment in it, which is the actor Jeter, right? Michael Jeter. Isn't it, as the villain? He's like a clown that uses the dog to like perform at children's birthday parties. Yeah. But he's like impossibly clumsy, and like everything around him is like falling apart. So, like, his truck falls apart. So at one point late in the film, he's chasing the kid who steals Air Bud back from him, and he like tries to open his truck door, and the door just falls off. And then, like, as he's driving, shit's, like, falling out of the engine and stuff. And then at one point, he has to turn, and he tries to turn the wheel, and the wheel flies off. That's rolling down the road. It's really good. All that stuff really worked for me. Outside of that, I'd say it's probably the worst theatrically released children's film of all time. Like, it's pretty god-awfully irredeemable. I mean, none of it makes any sense. The acting from everyone involved is terrible, with the exception maybe of the wise old Bill Cobbs character, who's supposed to be like a new ex-New York Knicks player, but now he's a custodian at the school, you know. And what's really strange, okay, I was doing a little bit of deep diving here. I'm not going to watch any more Air Bud movies, obviously. There's like 10 of them. But This kid's Kevin Zegers, who plays Josh Fram in the first two films, first four films. he also is in a movie called MVP, Most Valuable Primate, where a monkey plays hockey, but he's not playing Josh Fram. He plays another kid who finds a monkey who plays hockey.
It's a chimpanzee, and just, by the way.
Sure, whatever. so why would you cast Josh Fram in this role? No, like, it's such a weird thing to me. It's like, you know what we need in this movie about a kid who finds an animal who plays sports? That kid who's in that other movie about the animal who plays sports. It's just such a strange thing, isn't it? I mean, I feel like you don't see, like, the kid who plays Smalls in Sandlot, he's not in the Mighty Ducks. You know what I mean? He's not in all the other sports movies. They always have new actors in all of these films. I just don't understand. I would love to know the history. How it happened that this kid is in the Air Bud movies and he's called to do this this chimpanzee film, as JR points out. Anyway, not terribly important. Air Bud's a must miss. I would highly recommend not ever watching it. It's not even like bad in a fun way. It's just totally unfunny. I mean, you know, it's like it's funny for very little children. Like my kid thought it was funny, and she loves dogs. She's obsessed with dogs. So
yeah, you know, this is a bummer. Bummer to hear.
It is a bummer, man.
All right. Sorry, I made it out to the invite, Olivia Wilde's Sundance film that has been successful and critically acclaimed. I wanted to mention this because this is one of the only good movies that I have watched in the past, you know, 7 weeks since we recorded. This is, you know, just a couple. Olivia Wilde and Seth Rogen host a little dinner party with their apartment neighbors. Another couple played by Edward Norton and
Penelope Cruz.
Thank you. Lost her name. And, you know, it's sort of just like a, you know, it's like a one setting film, like a play where dialogue heavy, bunch of cringe comedy, awkward conversations. And I think it is quite good. And Olivia Wilde is fantastic in it. And I don't think I've had reason to say that about Olivia Wilde as an actor before, but I loved her in it. And Edward Norton's great too. I mean, all four of them are very good.
Did you see Tron Legacy? Cause I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I did. Don't like Tron Legacy. I mean, I think I've liked her before because I, you know, I did watch The OC in high school, where she was pretty important to me when she was introduced. She was extremely attractive to me when I was in high school. She is in, I think she's in Alpha Dog. I remember that. You know, she had that, that Drinking Buddies movie with Joe What's-His-Face that I thought was okay. Joe Swanberg.
Esterhaus? Joe Esterhaus?
Oh. Yes. No, so like, I don't think she's been bad. I didn't know she was capable of what she does in this movie, The Invite.
Pretending to be married to Seth Rogen?
Yeah, right?
It's impressive.
Seth Rogen is, you know, if there's a weak link, it's probably Seth Rogen. He's not bad. I do think he's good. Hold on, stay with me. I do think he's good in the movie. He is given sort of like the toughest, not toughest role to nail or anything. It's just like the stuff that he has to say and do is like the most kind of eye-rolly of any of them. You know, he's not meant to be nearly as kind of ridiculous in a funny way as Penelope Cruz and Edward Norton's characters. But again, I think this is very much worth people's time.
I'll get to it when it's streaming for free everywhere. Kevin?
All right. So my last one is I rewatched Night of the Living Dead. Just saw it on the shelf at the library. I was like, I need to watch this again. And it's okay. It's, I don't know. I still haven't seen, Dawn of the Dead, which I think, you know, I know more for like hardcore horror people. Like that's a, you know, big miss on my part, but I don't consider myself a hardcore horror guy, but, I do want to see it at some point. Oddly enough, we don't have, at my library system, we don't have the original. We just have the Zack Snyder remake.
Ooh.
And not going to watch that because I don't like Zack Snyder. But Yeah, funnily enough, ended up seeing a good chunk of it with the boys, and didn't really have much interest in it. Every now and then they would ask something, and it was like, well, you know, it's this, you know. Zombies can be different in different movies.
I think this is a great one. I'll lock it.
Like I just said, I watched rewatched Nostos, The Return, which is Franco Piavoli's interpretation of the Odyssey. You know, just sort of reorient myself and wash the taste of Nolan out of my mouth. And this stars Luigi Mezzanotte as Odysseus, who is just like not of this world or time. Like, you look at this guy's face, like he's perfectly cast here. And again, this movie, I've talked about this movie on the podcast before, but it's just so alien and so strange, and it's totally just like a mood piece. Like, it's not concerned at all with plot or the events of the narrative so much. Like, it doesn't even have the ending stuff in it at all. Like, he gets back to Ithaca and that's the end of the movie. But there's so much really cool, like, lighting, light and shadow shit that they do in this movie that I didn't even notice the first time. One really amazing scene where it's just totally black, the screen. You're just looking at blackness, and then all of a sudden this like white circle appears in the middle of the blackness, and it's this like woman carrying this shell, and she like steps out of the darkness into like a ray of light that I don't even know where it's coming from. It's so strange. And then Odysseus walks towards her out of the shadows in front of you, though. Like, he was hidden in front of you in the camera, in the shadows somehow. I don't know how they did it. And then he steps in front of her. They're both lit, but like their feet are still in shadow. Like, there's just black all around them. So I don't know if they're like in a black room or something. I don't know where the light's coming from. It's a really, really cool shot. It blew my mind. I actually watched it 3 times. This is a really cool, great interpretation. Way more interesting for me, way more successful for me than something like The Odyssey. Of course, you know, again, JR mentioned it, The Return. The Return is a great version of this, which is more concerned with the actual events of the story and has an incredible performance from Ralph Fiennes. So you get that too, and you get to see his dong, you know, so if you're into that.
We love dongs.
Have at it. That's all for me. I'm out.
You get a little glimpse of it in Red Dragon too.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true. You see his ass too in that one.
Yeah, a lot of ass in that one.
I can't remember. Do you see his dong in 28 Years Later?
Oh yeah, maybe. He's definitely nude at one point in one of those, because he's like rubbing the iodine all over himself.
Mm. Yeah, and he sleeps. I remember he goes to like his basement thing, and he definitely sleeps naked.
Yeah,
gets naked down there. Anyway, look,
sure,
it's important. We need more of that dude naked, obviously. all right, well then I'll do my final two. One is like a quick hit, which is, I did watch Sylvain Chomet's A Magnificent Life, which I thought was not great, but has a few... Sorry, I got a child screaming in her room. I'll have to monitor for a second. But a few just, like, beautiful moments, and I was just going to say, Kevin, you know, I did not love it, but I do think you should check it out. Just because, you know, it's like we love this animator. There are moments that that might work for you that didn't work for me, and again, like, it looks really good. And then I went and saw the Nicholas Winding Refn movie, Her Private Life, which I know I'm not the only one that did that.
Did I not talk about that? I thought we talked about this in the last episode.
No. We have seen this since... Yeah.
Oh, my mistake.
It's been a long time.
I would have talked about this already, but okay, we could talk about it real quick. It's cool.
Go ahead. Yeah, and it's... This is a movie that has not been received well, you know, in general. And I thought it was bonkers, and it didn't always make sense. And
bonkers.
Like... It's just like something about its mood and visual style just was, it clicked for me. I really enjoyed it. And I gave it a 3.5, and it sort of like a 3.5, like that I was fighting, because I was like, I want to give this higher, but I really don't know what to do with what I just saw. And I want to watch it again. It's a movie where I walked out and I was like, can't wait. Let's do this again sometime. Nicholas Winding Refn, when this comes out on Blu-ray or goes to streaming.
Yeah, I liked it as well quite a bit. I really loved all the Charles Melton shit. It was really cool. The sort of revenge story that's like baked into it, because he just can't. You know, he can't have one of these films without... Well, I guess he did with Neon Demon, but it's just, like, interesting, because, like, Charles Melton essentially is the same character as, you know, the guy in Drive or Ryan Gosling in Only God Forgives. Like, he's just this sort of, like, machine for revenge.
Right.
And who knows karate and violence and shit. This is like, and I love the staging of those fight scenes was really cool. And I agree. I dug all the weird, just sort of like the those two Asian ladies, the one who like does like interpretive dance essentially, you know, to communicate. And it reminded me of Twin Peaks Fire Walk with Me, where they had the lady with the blue rose or whatever. And she does the dance, and it's like he interprets it as whatever, you know, to tell them something about the... But anyway...
There's a fair amount of Lynch in this movie, and...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I had, like, some thoughts as I left the theater where I had a few director names that this reminded me of, and those are all gone. I wish I'd written those down. Because I think there are some clear influences here that now that's failing me. But anyway,
I could see like even a I mean, just the fact that he shoots everything on sets in the movie, like I don't think there's any location shooting at all in the movie. It didn't seem like.
I highly doubt it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, that's a cool, it feels like he's going. Even further into, you know how everybody's always like, oh, he's just style over substance. It's just style with Nicholas Winding Refn. It feels like he's just like, yeah, fuck you. It is all style. And I'm going to go even further into the style. It's like, I'm going to make it pure style. Like, there's no reality to this at all. You know, it's just, we're essentially just in like a dreamland the entire time. And, I love the visual of the villain guy also, like the slasher villain, whatever his name, Leatherman. Yeah, I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a case to be made that, like, this is, you know, a dream that's playing out. You know, I think there's the sort of, like, the haze that has descended upon the city that will not leave, you know, is very... you know, like whimsically dreamy, but also sort of like, you know, like the fog of memory, like how dreams kind of like disappear, unless you do a very good, maybe you're better than me at remembering your dreams, but like, I feel like my dreams disappear quickly. Anyway, the haze does it disappear quickly.
How
I'm losing my mind. Losing
it
my
was,
thoughts here.
It was nice to see Diego Calva. I feel like I haven't seen him since Babylon. So that was cool.
Oh, and yeah.
He's in a new movie, too. He's in another movie that's coming out called Club Kid that I've been...
Yeah,
looks,
I heard
sorry.
That was good.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah, I dig it. We'll definitely rewatch. But anyway, that's that. Kevin, you got anything else?
Nope, that's it.
All right. Then it's time for Kevin's pick and his homework assignment, which I have.
All right. So my pick for next time is going to be John McTiernan's The Hunt for Red October.
Oh, that's
good. Yeah, you know, Sam Neill just passed away not that long ago. John true. Hasn't seen it, which is insane because John McTiernan. And like,
I never seen
in the words of John, had to be done.
Yeah, actually, Rustin has been trying to get me to watch this movie for years, and so much so that he bought me the Blu-ray, and I still never watched it.
Wow.
I do recall putting it on and starting it at one point, and only making it like 10 minutes in before I had to stop it for some reason, and never getting back to it. So yeah, I'm psyched. I'll check definitely, you know, I'm excited to... Any John McTiernan film sounds good to me.
Yeah.
And,
we're talking 1990 John McTiernan, so, yeah. Like, peak.
and with, along with that, Kevin, you're going to be, watching About a Boy.
Oh, okay.
Directed by Chris Weitz and Paul Weitz, starring, Hugh Grant and a very young Nicholas Hoult.
Right.
And this movie is feels like a good fit for you, actually, because it's very British.
Right.
And it's got got Toni Collette and Rachel Weisz in it. So they're good. You know, and you've never seen it, apparently.
I have not.
And I recall liking it when I saw it. An ex-girlfriend made me watch it when we were dating. And I seem to recall liking it quite a bit, so just, you know, finding it
good deal.
Enjoyable. But yeah, so next time we'll be watching Hunt for October, and until then, visit our website at filmiacpodcast.com. Write to us, filmiacpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on social media, whatever. Just listen to the fucking show, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
The best hard rock albums of 2013.